Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday on 1080 The Fan.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. The rollicking song he sweeps along, swaggering boistelessly.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make the Fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two. Even when we went a little over, we still came back okay.
That's not bad for four guests, man. By the way, we're getting a lot of words texted in.
Oh, that people just struggle with for whatever reason?
Integral.
Integral, yeah.
Somebody said, my sister used to say simonin for cinnamon until she was like 18 years old.
I had a problem for a brief second with cinnamon and synonym.
Synonym, yeah, those are very similar words.
I'd always like, can I get some cinnamon?
You guys pass the synonyms? Wait, what? Ambulance, somebody said can't say ambulance.
I have a cousin that he still can't say ambulance.
Peculiar, and this is like now a test to see if I can say all these words.
That's my other word.
All right, this is a long one here. I got to go like dumb and dumber. Sound it out. The annual colloquialism?
Colloquialism? Is
close?
That?
Yeah. Right? No,
I think
great.
I did that right.
Teacher, great.
Colloquialism.
Okay, there you go. That's close.
Peculiar. It's the L ones.
You just said it wrong.
Peculiar.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Oh, you did it on purpose.
No.
Oh.
I know I can't say it. It's these L words. When the L's are a little in there, it kind of throws me off because I want it. I really want to emphasize the peculiar.
We have soldier and shoulder. Somebody said I mess those up all the time. For the life of me, I can't say rural.
Rural. I like that we both kind of just do like a.
And then this is another good one. Somebody texted in a peanut butter cup.
All right. Well, that was just one time.
I'd much rather us be a peanut butter cup.
All right.
Place.
All right. Yeah. Sprague's a moron.
Those are tough ones, man. Those are tough words.
Those aren't easy. Cups.
Yeah. Birth kit skimpa.
That was just Nurkic's girlfriend's name. Okay. We got a loaded second hour. I want to start it with something that we just discovered that's kind of blowing our minds, and it might be great news for Kansas City fans out there. So, look, yeah. I am one that we love to gamble here. We do Sprague and the Line. We're always giving picks. Me and Dirt are always telling you what spreads are. We're degenerates. We're happy about it. It's okay. But we're always checking in to see what Vegas is thinking. I don't always go with the Vegas thinking. I thought Tennessee's line was too high last weekend. I ended up being okay.
Yeah.
But this line in particular is really kind of throwing me off, and it's making me second guess everything about this. Tell the individuals what we discovered.
We discovered, courtesy of Jason Swagger.
Swag found this.
Yeah, I was checking out the lottery scoreboard site and going into the individual prop bets for that game.
Sometimes you got to dig through the weeds in these. You just do. It's nice.
Sure.
Because there's so many different ones. Sometimes you just glance over it. The over-under for Derrick Henry's rushing yards is 106.
106.5.
So it's 106.5. Just for the perspective, again, he has been rushing for 180 plus the last three games.
Against better defenses than Kansas City's.
And what David Beauclair, who told us when we were talking to him, when they played Kansas City, Henry had 188.
He ran all over them.
That ended up kind of being the start of them figuring this whole thing out with Tannehill and going on this run. Vegas is clearly thinking this game is not going to be what we think it is. I think that makes me feel even better about my opinion, but they could also be super wrong on this.
Yeah, the over is the favorite. It's -130. So you got to bet 130 to win 100. Yeah. And the under, though, is even money. So if you bet 100, you win 100.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's lines like this every now and then that you just wonder, what the hell is Vegas doing? Like, what did they know? I had one of these in the NBA last night, and I sometimes glance at NBA lines. Denver was playing Golden State. Golden State's the worst team in the NBA. Denver is 2-seed in the West, right?
Yeah. 2-seed
in the West. Yeah. It was in Golden State, so I'll be fair there. It was on the road at least. Denver was only favored by 3.5. And I saw that line, and I was like, that's the biggest no-brainer bet of all time. Denver's the 2 seed. Golden State sucks. What am I missing here? Mm-hmm. I hesitated, didn't place the bet, even though I liked it. I wake up this morning and I see that Denver won by 3 in overtime, that Golden State covered their spread. This is one of those lines. Yeah. You're just thinking to yourself, what do they know?
Can't win if he doesn't get over 106, right?
Here's my theory. Now, by the way, I sent this to my buddies in a group chat, and there's now people betting $200 each way on this.
I'm telling you, I'm betting the other way now.
Yeah, because everybody's thinking like
it's too fishy. It's too convenient.
Here's my theory, and I think the only theory that makes sense. None of this is about Kansas City's defense. Kansas City's defense is not great. I think Houston showed that. Or like, this isn't about all of a sudden having faith in the Chiefs front seven. This is the point that I've been bringing up all week, and it's the fear around Tennessee. They play a certain style, and if they don't have the lead, they can't play that style. You alluded to it earlier in the show as well. Derrick Henry handing it off to him over and over and over again for 5, 6, 7, 8 yards a pop in the second half is great. You can't do that if you're down 24-7. You can't do it if the score's 31-21 in the fourth quarter. You're not going to keep riding Derrick Henry because you need points and you need him in a hurry. And I think that line is set simply because they view this as Kansas City. Mahomes going to throw a couple of touchdowns early. They'll get a couple of scores on the board, and Tennessee's going to have to play catch up. And if they're playing catch up all day, he's not going to have over 106 yards unless he breaks one of those big runs.
Yeah, because you're not going to go give him 30 carries in a game if you're down 14 or 17, right? You're like, crap, we don't have the time for this.
The scary part about the bet, though, because I see what you're saying. I really want to take the under on it, too. The scary part about the bet is that he has the ability to get 80% of these yards in one carry.
Oh, he did it. He's a big game-breaking running back. He's not just a 6'3", pound it through the tackles for 4 or 5. This dude can run. He runs like a 4.4 40. So when he gets through, not only is it hard to tackle him, but he just needs to get through your little DB, and he's busting a 60-yard run.
He had a run of 66 yards against Baltimore, the one that got him all the way down to like the 1-yard line. He ended up throwing the touchdown pass on that drive.
He did it the week prior in Houston, too, to get the rushing crown, by the way. He had a 53-yarder.
He went for 211 yards in that game. So that's where, I mean, if he breaks one of those off in the first quarter, you're looking at him only needing 60 yards the rest of the game. That's when it becomes a really dangerous bet. You're gambling on Kansas City's defense early because you know Tennessee's going to run the football in the first
quarter. When you do odds like that, though, I feel like you're kind of telling people. Now, again, Vegas is not perfect, but Vegas is Vegas because a lot of us are idiots, and they're like, oh, Vegas doesn't know what they're talking about.
Right.
They're on to something.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to find out Monday. We come in. By the way, we have a show Monday. We're not off.
Yeah, we'll be here Monday.
We love MLK, but we're still going to do a show.
Monday's my birthday, man.
I know it is.
Look at that. I'll be here on my birthday.
Well, you just ruined the Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, please don't do that.
Oh, it's going to happen.
Please, it's the tradition
that keeps on giving.
Nobody wants it to give.
I think everybody wants it. Mike Myers, Wayne's World, happy birthday. It makes everybody feel awkward. But I think come Monday, if we're talking Tennessee... this, Kansas City, that. Could you imagine coming in Monday and what we're talking about is, hey, Derrick Henry had 91 yards and Tennessee won.
Yeah.
Because Ryan Tannehill was amazing, or there was a stupid turnover, or a blocked field
happening.
Goal.
It's not happening. Mark it right
I
now.
Know it.
It's not happening.
Okay, mark it.
Mark it right now.
Mark a 10, dude.
There's no way that he goes for less than 90 yards or less than 100 yards and they win that game.
But it's... they're a weird team. They shouldn't be here. They're 9-7. I understand the Derrick Henry, when you can run the ball and you can play. These are all valid and right points. Good run game and great defenses always get you succeeding in the NFL. It will make no sense to me if that happens, a 9-7 team. A 9-7 team shouldn't even get to this point. Most of the time, that doesn't even get you into the postseason.
No.
And here they are in the AFC Championship game. I already think their team doesn't make sense. So if you tell me Derrick Henry come Monday, I'm still going to be surprised. But if you tell me Derrick Henry has 90 yards and they win, I'm going to shrug my shoulders and assume they're winning the Super Bowl at that point.
They're like reversing every trend we think we know about the NFL on this run that they're
have
on.
Have we ever had a 9-game Super Bowl champion, a 9-game winning Super Bowl champion?
I'm willing to bet the Giants probably were it.
Were
one
they
of those
9-7
years?
Or I thought they were 10-6?
All right, let me look it
Maybe
up.
I'm wrong on
I
that.
I thought they were 9-7. Then Green Bay also was the 6-seed, right? I think when Rodgers won his first Super Bowl, they were a 6-seed
as
well.
Oh, they were a 6-seed?
Those are the 6-seeds that have done it in the history of the league.
Those were talented.
Now, the Giants weren't the 6-seed, I think, the second time, or were they the 6-seed the second time
as well? No, they were a 4.
Because I know they had to go to Green Bay in the divisional round, and they beat Green Bay that year was 15-1, and they beat Aaron Rodgers in the divisional round.
Weren't the Ravens one of those years?
No, the Ravens the year that they won it won 11 games, I think.
I thought they were a wild card one of the 1 year.
I know they went to New England and upset the Patriots that season. But
all right, let me Google worst record for Super Bowl champ because I looked up NFL.
I mean, 9 wins is about as bad as you get,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'd be willing to bet there's obviously, I don't think there's ever been an 8-8 teams, but I would assume that maybe one of them's been 9-7.
Just keep that in the back of your minds out there, even if you're not going to bet it or anything, but just keep that in your mind that
10 worst records to ever win a Super Bowl. Here we go. It okay. looks like the Giants in 2011 were 9-7.
Okay, so a 9-win team has won it then.
Yeah.
God, that's wild to me. That's one of those things, like football has always been known as, well, you settle it on the field. Who's better? Well, settle it on the field. I hear that. Football from time to time can also be the team that's not the best in the league, in my opinion, wins a Super Bowl. That's just kind of how the game breaks when you play a one and done.
Yeah. Yeah, they were 9-7. They were 10-6 the year they won the first one, 9-7 the second time.
There you go. Maybe that's Tennessee this year. But just keep that in the back of your mind, man. Vegas is thinking he's not rushing a whole ton of yards, or at least they're setting that number pretty low. So if you think he's going to kill Kansas City, then great. Go make some money.
Take that bet, man.
But if you're already kind of about this game, I would take that as maybe a positive to bet against Tennessee. But who the hell knows who's going to be right? We got more on the conference championship games. I want to get to this, and I want to ask this question. And I really need honest feedback from non-Packer fan. I know how Packer fan feels about this one. Fan text lines 55305. Do you want Aaron Rodgers to have another Super Bowl championship? Let's talk about that one next on The Fan. All right, coming up at 1:30, we'll be joined by Radio.com Sports NBA insider Ryan McDonough with a look at all things NBA, trade deadline, Blazers, young players, Zion's coming back soon. And Ryan is brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. Ryan McDonough, the former GM of the Suns, and his brother is obviously Sean McDonough, the play-by-play voice formerly of Monday Night Football. Still doing stuff for ESPN. All right. I asked the question for the break.
A lot of Aaron Rodgers haters at the fan
text. See, that's
line.
What I was wondering is yeah. Aaron Rodgers is, I mean, you can not like him. That's cool. And I get it. But you have to admit, Aaron Rodgers is an all-time great. He's one of the best throwers of the football we've ever seen in the league history. But he also has a personality type that does not come off positively for a lot of people. And you mentioned this, and I give you credit for it. He's 36. He's going to be 37 next year. And while he might play till he's 43, so maybe he's still got 3 or 4 good years.
You never know.
A lot of people pointed out that his production's not quite what it was. And he's still, you know, there's little tales that show that he's kind of dropped a little bit from his like absolute prime. Are people rooting for Aaron Rodgers who aren't Packer or Niner fans? Are they rooting for Aaron Rodgers to get a second Super Bowl in his career? Do they want to see Aaron Rodgers have 2 rings, or do people just want to not see Aaron Rodgers succeed again?
I think the favorable matchup in the Super Bowl, and I've said this before, I'll say it again, is San Francisco, Kansas City. But a good consolation prize would be Kansas City, Green Bay for the Mahomes versus Rodgers angle. The old versus the new, the future of the NFL versus the guy who's been one of the best over the last 10, 15 years.
The final battle
the
for
final
all
state. The final battle, right? I mean, that to me is intriguing. And I look.
I made a joke there. You didn't pick it up. It's okay.
No, I didn't see.
I said the final battle for Allstate.
Oh, yeah. I saw somebody tweet that, terrified of it.
That they rigged it.
Like, if that ends up being the Super Bowl matchup. Those commercials are already by far the worst on television.
Oh.
And if you, those commercials are awful.
They're the worst on television?
Look, there's bad commercials on TV. The Chris Paul ones that they're still doing with, like, the Bach knocking off his bowling balls and stuff, like, can't stand those anymore. And the Rodgers agent one is just insufferable.
Yeah. It's not a good commercial.
My new Mahomie. Have you met my Mahomie?
I got an app. Dude, you don't have an app.
Those commercials are insufferable. A part of me is rooting for Aaron Rodgers to get another one. I'd be okay with it.
Why is that?
Because I think he's been a tremendous quarterback his entire career. I think he's come close a couple of times. You know, I'll always remember for his career the NFC title game that they should have won in Seattle. They were up, 16-0 in that game? And that would have been an Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady Super Bowl if his tight end catches an onside kick, but they blow the lead. Seattle fakes the kick. They get, you know, credit to Seattle. They went on, and that ended up being a tremendous Super Bowl with the throwing at the 1 yard line. That was a fascinating game. But he came damn close, and he probably should have won that game. He didn't do anything necessarily to lose it. So he's a guy who's had a tremendous career, and I think there's part of you. I would have said the same thing if this was Breeze in the NFC title game. Right? They say Breeze doesn't lose to Minnesota. They go into Green Bay and they win. And here we are with San Francisco and New Orleans. That would be an angle for me, a Breeze getting his second ring. Like, you're talking about guys who are some of the best we've ever seen do it, and you just don't know how many more times you're going to see it. And I do think that's a big storyline this weekend. We all pretend because of Brady that these things go on forever. I watched Drew Brees in that game, man. He looked old, and it made you wonder. They're going to win a lot of games next year. They're going to win a lot of games because the division is up in the air.
Or is his arm going to fall off, and he's not going to be able to play a full season? You got to be careful with this. Like,
sure,
he'll be back. They'll still be good. We don't know that, man.
No, I think the team will still be good, but good enough to win a Super Bowl, I don't know. Because I don't see them being better next year than they were this year because of the age factor, and I feel the same way about Green Bay. They got a lot of good pieces, but he's going to be 37 years old next year. He's clearly not the quarterback now that he used to be. There is an angle there that, yeah, I can appreciate greatness one more time. And if he wins it, I'd be totally fine with it.
By the way, I totally butchered that bad dad joke. It's State Farm. I said Allstate. So,
oh, yeah.
Not only did you not pick up my terrible dad joke.
I didn't correct you.
I then became the ultimate dad joke teller, and I butchered it.
You know what that was? That was mayhem.
You mean like you?
Where the hell is this segment going?
I don't know, man, but I'm enjoying the dad joke life. I'll tell you that much.
This
is a good one. Let me read this real quick. As a Packer, this is the fan text line. As a Packers owner, I wish it was possible to allow the Packers to win and somehow Rodgers to lose. Love the team, hate the guy. He's kind of always dealt with this.
Like, I
think Green Bay largely has accepted him, and they love watching him play.
Why wouldn't you accept him?
Well, because
he's an MVP. He won a Super Bowl. Like, get out of here. Accept him. You've had two quarterbacks for 30 years. Cry me a river. He can be a douche every now and then.
Well, but here's the thing, though, Dirt. I think people were so enamored with Brett that Aaron comes off as kind of the complete opposite of that, right? He's a slightly more recluse.
That drives me nuts.
Slightly more arrogant in the way he talks and carries himself. He's always in the news. Like, I'm not telling you any of this is right. He's always kind of in the news with, like, hey, oh, this is who he's dating now. Aaron Rodgers sells this house. Aaron Rodgers buys a California house. Aaron Rodgers doesn't get along with his family. Aaron Rodgers questions the coaching staff. Aaron Rodgers is a part for the coaching staff being fired and broken up. Fair or not, I do think there's a decent contingent of Packer fan that, yeah, they want their team to win and they want Rodgers to win, but it's not the same love and affinity that they have for him that they had for Brett. And he's lasted just as long as Brett Favre.
He has. And some would argue
Brett
Favre been better.
Only won you one Super Bowl.
Yeah, I would argue with the lack of interceptions that he's thrown compared to Brett Favre, he's actually been better.
But Rodgers is, the only way I can really explain it is this. This is the best way I can sum it up. Because I know people personally that are Packer fans that do not like him. They're like, yeah, he's amazing and he wins, and that's great. Not big fan. The difference to me is one is a Midwestern personality type. The other is a West Coast California kid. And stupid or not,
maybe that's it.
I do think there's something to that. Favre grew up in Mississippi, right? He's played in Atlanta, played at Southern Mississippi. Then he comes to Green. He fits right in with the people of Wisconsin there. Rodgers, Portland, then California, then plays at Cal. California kid who wanted to be drafted by the Niners. He has to go to Green. It's just a different type of personality.
If I were a fan of the team, I would never understand that. And there should always be an appreciation for the legacy of quarterbacks that they have. And you can sit here and complain that he's standoffish. He's not great with the media. He's not an aw shucks, I'm from Wisconsin kind of guy. Good luck when he retires. Because this doesn't happen. We talked about this yesterday. The New England's maybe the only other example, and that's only because Brady's got like 20 years on his own of going from Bledsoe, and who made it to a Super Bowl, and then Brady taking over.
The Colts got it a minute
Luck retired after like 7 years. So these things don't happen. You don't go on quarterback runs like this back-to-back. And if you whiff on the next guy, welcome back to the reality of the NFL when you're searching every single year for the next franchise quarterback. Taking Aaron Rodgers for granted and not liking him, that would drive me nuts if I was a Packer fan. I get it. Not everybody's going to have the same personality. Brett Favre is that way. Damian Lillard is this.
There's a comp there.
Sure, he's a unique
Damon
personality. CJ. He's outgoing. He's great in the community. He's great with interviews. Like, we connect with him better. But it doesn't mean like it took away from the appreciation of somebody like LaMarcus Aldridge. I didn't hate LaMarcus Aldridge when he was a Blazer. The guy had the personality of cardboard. He was a little standoffish. It didn't matter to me.
Cardboard's quite versatile.
He was still an all-star caliber player. Just be careful what you wish for, man. I, I don't understand that sentiment from Packer fans.
Somebody says, love the Blazers, hate Myers.
Well, Myers sucks.
I know.
Let's not compare Myers Leonard to one of the best quarterbacks of all time, please, for the love of God.
Why? Myers is an all-time great legend.
Jesus. So where the Aaron hell Rogers. Are we going with this?
I can't explain it, Dirt, but it's something I was thinking about as their season went on and they continued to be one of these top ball clubs. I kept going, I wonder where people are at with him winning a second one. And obviously second one would mean...
That's a whole different ball
it
game.
It is. It's a different stratosphere of quarterback. Fair or not, it's just what we do as fans. It's what we do in barbershops. It's what we do on TV, on radio. We all have these conversations and stuff like that, as dumb as it might be to some,
right,
matters a lot to others. I remember going into this postseason run, they were talking about the Saints on Good Morning Football, I think it was. And they brought up Breeze and they said, what if Breeze got a second Super Bowl? What does that do? Who does he pass all time wise? And all the pundits were saying he passes Manning. They were like, look, both would have two. Manning didn't really do much for the second. Breeze, if they win, was amazingly efficient this year.
He broke all of his passing records.
He broke the passing record, right? So like, I'm not telling you I agree with it, but this is how people view things in a sports bubble is... You have X amount, it means you're this. If you don't, you're that. If you don't win anything, you're this. Excuses, no excuses. Like the guy, hate the guy. This is the world we live in with this stuff. And they're knocking on the door. I think they're going to have a good chance to win that game Sunday.
Yeah.
And they're knocking on the door of potentially going and getting a second trophy with him at the helm. And I think you do have Packer fan that's like, you know, great if they do it. I wish it was Brett, though.
I'm ready to fast forward to the post Aaron Rodgers career for those fans what reality's
you.
Like. And you're trying to develop Deshaun Kaiser or Brett Hundley. Like, welcome to the reality of the NFL. I will say this, though. If he is to get back and have a chance at winning another one, somebody pointed out correctly, Kansas City and Green Bay, I believe the first ever Super Bowl, so it'd be fun in year 100 of the league. That's kind of a fun throwback story if those two teams to face. And I believe that's the last time Kansas City went. Isn't
it was the second Super Bowl?
Wasn't it? Or have they been to one since? Did they go to one after that and lose? Because I think it's been 50-something years since they've been to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time. I know that.
Yeah, those two teams played in the first two that the Packers won. I believe Kansas City won Super Bowl 4. So after...
Okay.
What
so
was that coach's name, Casey's coach?
Hank Stram,
yeah. He was, I mean...
And they had the bros smoking heaters in the locker room.
Yeah.
Who was their quarterback's name,
smoking
heaters.
I'm going to double-check the history
okay,
there.
Okay, double-check. So that's a fun angle. But I will say, though, if Rodgers is to get there, even just to have this conversation exist of winning another one, he needs to have a game on Sunday.
Dude, I'm not... There's a lot of people who do not like this guy. They just don't. He rubs them the wrong way. Somebody says Eli has two. And I thank you for doing that. So Eli is not considered an all-time great. He doesn't have the records. He doesn't have the stats for it. And Eli Manning, if he only wins one, the difference between one and two is this for me with Eli. First of all, if he doesn't win any, Eli's not even a Hall of Famer. If he wins only one, that takes Eli from maybe first ballot, most likely second, and I don't know how many you can go, but maybe second, third, fourth. He has two. Eli is a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. That's the differences we're talking about here is Rodgers is going to be first ballot. He's accomplished too much. He's accomplished far more than Eli. But that's the difference for most of these quarterbacks is, oh, he's got one more trophy, first ballot. Oh, he only has one? Put him in the second or third time. Oh, he didn't win any? Well, let's blame him a lot and then not put him in at all. Sometimes this stuff is stupid, but there's too many people that feel this way. So you kind
of conversation,
just, it's the norm. It's so what we do in bars.
Indeed. Chiefs and Packers played the very first Super Bowl, and then the Chiefs won Super Bowl 4, beating the Minnesota Vikings 23-7. And they have not been back since.
There you go. Another one here. Another Packer owner texting. What does that mean, by the way? Season ticket holder? Is that
no,
what
you
means?
Can buy
no,
a stake in the company.
No, they're a publicly traded company. You can buy shares.
I thought you only got... I thought that was part of the... If you bought season tickets, you...
You can buy a stake in the company, yeah. Man.
So we got another Packer fan who says he's an owner or she's an owner. It says Rodgers is a standoff D-bag. Rodgers is the Jose Canseco of football. Look at his numbers against winning teams.
Oh, God.
Another one. Eli had his biggest moments in big games. Rodgers has traditionally struggled in big games. Another Packer fan, if you read comment sections you think the fans don't like him, go to a Packer bar there. Almost anyone in Wisconsin, and he's almost universally loved. The media take wants to play up the drama. The reality is, just like the media narrative on his relationship with LaFleur earlier this season, it doesn't reflect sentiments of most fans. No doubt about it. I do not think a majority hates Aaron Rodgers, but you can't deny that that doesn't exist.
Name me a quarterback other than Tom Brady and Joe Montana that, or I guess Troy Aikman maybe, that didn't struggle in big games. You can point to examples for literally every other one.
Yeah, well, playoff numbers are always difficult.
Peyton Manning's one of the best of all time. Go look at his big games for the first 10 years of his career. And then
Dan Marino dropped production.
Dan Marino, John Elway until he finally broke through late.
It's also not kind of fair, though. These guys only get to play one or two or three games in a playoff.
Go look at some of the numbers, too, that teams have scored on Green Bay in games that they've lost. Like, remember the Kaepernick games that they lost when Kaepernick ran all over them and they couldn't stop him in the playoffs? Was that Aaron Rodgers' fault? I hate that stat.
I care more about what was your career win percentage. The seasons are long, man. If you were largely successful, you were doing something right.
I care more about, do you have a cool mustache?
So you want him to win a second one, and a lot of people don't.
For him. I'm okay with it. I still
Is it important to you?
No, it's not important Rodgers to guy? Me. It's a good consolation if they are to win, and I'm totally fine with it.
All right, we got a lot more to get to. Coming up next, our radio.com NBA insider, former Suns GM, longtime exec in Boston, and now he's our radio.com NBA insider. Ryan McDonough joins the show. We talk a little basketball. We'll dive back into football. Don't worry. A little hoops next.
All right, welcome back in. Excited for our next guest. Lots going on in the NBA, including a big game tonight for Portland. A big weekend for Portland and Dallas and Oklahoma City. The return of Zion. Lots going on in the league. Joining us now to talk about it on the line, radio.com sports NBA insider Ryan McDonough. Insider calls are brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. A former GM of the Phoenix Suns, also spent time with the Boston Celtics. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us again, man. We had a great conversation in December. I enjoyed it. I'll just start with, I think the big thing that's looming over the NBA next week, and I know I'm excited for it, is the return of Zion Williamson, the big number one overall pick. How excited are you to watch him, and just what do you think, what kind of impact can he have on New Orleans early on?
Well, I think he'll certainly have an impact, and keep in mind that New Orleans is pretty good recently without him. I think they're 9-3 in their last 12 games, and as you guys know, this isn't a typical year in the Western Conference. With the Trailblazers at 18-24, most years you'd be done if you were with that record in the West halfway through the season, but they're only a game and a half back, and New Orleans, as it stands right now, is only 3.5 games back, and Zion has not played yet, so I think it's good for, obviously, Zion. It's good for the Pelicans. And as importantly, maybe more importantly, guys, I think it's good for the league because I've always thought these are kind of the dog days of the NBA season in the second half of January. You know, the holidays have come and gone, all the excitement of opening night and then Christmas, and then the All-Star break is still a few weeks away. So I think it's good for the league. I think a lot of people who are casual fans or haven't tuned in certainly to watch the Pelicans this year will watch Zion, and I think and hope that'll give the league a good jolt as we approach the trade deadline and then the All-Star game.
Well, it's exciting to get Zion back on the court and just to get to see him play and what he's going to look like in the NBA, Ryan. But I'm curious of another rookie in his class that was picked right after him. He's really kind of taken the league by storm this last month, and his team is playing exceptional basketball, and that's Ja Morant in Memphis. Just kind of what your thoughts of what he could be in the league. I know a lot of people loved him coming out, but has he surprised you? Has he maybe played better than you thought he would his first year? And what do you make of Memphis's kind of resurgence here to fight for that final playoff spot?
Yeah, I thought Ja Morant was clearly a top two player in last year's draft, guys. And in fact, I spent a lot of time analyzing the draft, and I strongly considered putting him number one ahead of Zion, given the importance of the position in today's NBA. As you guys know, you have one of the best in the business in your backyard and Damian Lillard. And I think that position is so important in today's NBA. And, you know, look at Murray State, we could all see the size and athleticism with Ja. The thing that separated him in college and has continued at a high level in the NBA is his creativity and his feel, and his playmaking ability is unique for a rookie. And I think when guys come in, especially perimeter players who take the league by storm, a year ago it was Luka Doncic, who's even built upon it this year, and now Ja Morant, that's what separates them, guys. As you know, you see it in the NBA, I think you see it in all sports, where young players come in and the thing they say when they're interviewed is, boy, the game moves really fast, I'm hoping it slows down, or when they experience some success, they talk about how the game slowed down for them. I think Ja Morant is unique because, like Luka Doncic, he came in and it already looked like the game was moving slowly, and that's why, for me, Memphis is the surprise team in the league, and I don't think any of us, I certainly did not have them as the eighth-seeded team or in the top eight in the Western Conference midway through the season.
No, not at all, and as you alluded to in that first answer, that eighth seed up for grabs, and they hold on to it right now, 19-22. They got a game lead on San Antonio. We're talking to Ryan McDonough, NBA insider for radio.com. Spent a long time with the Boston Celtics, also the former GM of the Phoenix Suns. And you're looking at that 8 seed, you alluded to Portland and the disappointing year that they're having now, 18-24, although you could argue they just had their best win of the year in Houston the other night. You had the chance to talk to Neil O'Shea recently, and I'm just curious what you picked up from that, because we're looking at this not understanding exactly what his strategy is going to be, because you have these expiring contracts coming up. You're waiting for guys to get healthy. Do you try and unload them? Do you bring on a big contract? Do you just let them expire and try and spend money in the offseason? What did you pick up from O'Shea about his deadline strategy?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge for Neil, guys, is that he hasn't seen his team fully healthy, and he won't see his team fully healthy before the trade deadline, which is 3 weeks from yesterday. And so the challenges there are, you know, I think a lot of it will be dependent on his medical staff, what his team doctors and trainers are telling him about Zach Collins and the rehab from the left shoulder surgery, how that's going, and Yusuf Nurkic coming back from the compound fracture in his leg. And if those guys are going to be back relatively soon in February or March, then, you know, Portland's still in the mix enough to you know, make a move and get in the playoffs. You know, however, on the flip side, if those rehabs are taking longer, those guys, there may be some longer acclimation period to either get them back on the court or then get into the flow when they are on the court. I think that could go a different way for Portland. So my guess is Portland either holds or adds to their team at the deadline. I don't think they'll be a seller because, as you guys know, as long as you have Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum healthy and playing, you have a shot, and you have one of the best backcourts in the league. Carmelo's given the Blazers a nice lift, so I think the Blazers will either hold and hopefully get those guys back relatively soon who were injured in the front court, or look to make a minor additions around the edges like they did with Carmelo.
Yeah, you know, Ryan, we were just talking about this yesterday. We looked at their next 13 games, and that schedule gets kind of brutal for them, and we know defensively they've had their lapses despite having just a big win the other night. I'm curious from the GM standpoint, the front office standpoint, how you view things when you guys are in those offices versus doing this media thing, because we like to, hey, tank. Oh, hey, you should go trade for that guy. It's all fun and games for us. You guys are the ones that live it. What point in the season when you're X amount of games below 500 in your mind, because you said this is the dog days of the season, at what point do the Blazers maybe realistically need to look at going, what are we playing here for?
Well, the challenge, guys, and I've been on both sides of it, obviously, being an NBA front officer for 15-plus years and now on the media side, is it's a lot easier for the three of us to sit here and say they should do that than it is for Neil O'Shea or Terry Stotts or, most importantly, the players in the Trailblazers locker room to show up and say, hey, guys, the goal is just to develop the young players and not win games. As you know, that's not the culture that O'Shea and Stotts have built there over the last 6 or 7 years. That's a consistent playoff team and a consistent winning team that went to the Western Conference Finals a year ago. And I think, you know, all that being said, the team is too good. As long as Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum are playing, they're too good to tank. You know, they'd be 13th in the lottery if the lottery were today. So, you know, your odds in that range of the lottery are so minuscule as far as moving up into the top four. You have a less than 5% chance of getting a top four pick. So that's why I think they'll continue to try to win as many games as they can. It sounds great, tank. It makes sense mathematically, although maybe less sense now than it did with the new flatter lottery odds. So I think Portland will continue to win because, again, more importantly, most importantly for the franchise, Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum are too good. And, you know, you don't bring in a guy like Carmelo Anthony and then say, okay, we're just going to play our young guys. That would not sit well with their veteran players, starting with Damian Lillard, which is why I think they'll either hold or add to their roster as we approach the trade deadline.
Is there a name that's been rumored out there as maybe available or maybe somebody that can trade some of their assets for that you think would fit really well with them? And even if it takes up cap space, so what? The fit makes a lot of sense to you.
Yeah, I think their biggest need, guys, as I look at their roster, is on the wing. You guys know they weren't maybe great players or big names, but Al-Farouq Aminu and Maurice Harkless helped that team win a lot of games over the past 3 or 4 years, and those guys are both gone. Rodney Hood, who, you know, played a nice role for the Blazers, especially in the playoffs against Denver last year, he's injured. So they have a big hole there on the wing. And I keep an eye on a guy like Robert Covington from Minnesota. You know, he's a 3-and-D guy. He's a good shooter. He's an excellent defender. He's got some positional versatility. He's got 2 years left in his contract, which I think, given his salary slot in that $11 to $12 million range, is a positive thing for the Blazers. So I keep an eye on a player like that, him specifically, or a player like that who can play defense, shoot threes, and doesn't need the ball, because, as you know, the way that Portland plays, that Damian and CJ will have the ball in their hands most of the game.
Right, right. We're talking with Ryan McDonough, former front office executive for the Boston Celtics, former GM of the Phoenix Suns, radio.com NBA insider here on the line. You look at that Western Conference race, too, and I feel like at this point in the year, so much attention is being paid to the Lakers and the Clippers, and rightfully so. I mean, the Lakers are having an incredible year. The Clippers, despite the load management and gelling that new roster, are still having a great year. In your opinion, though, do you think teams like Denver, maybe Utah, Houston, Dallas are getting a little overlooked in the conversation of who can win the West?
I do. I would still have the two L.A. teams as the favorites. I actually have the Clippers slightly ahead of the Lakers, obviously not in terms of regular season record, but in terms of their high-end talent combined with their depth. I just think the Clippers have more ways to beat you when they get to the playoffs and they're not doing load management or they're not being as conservative with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George in the minutes they're playing. But keep an eye on Denver and then Utah in particular. They lost last night in New Orleans, but I think they've won the previous 10 games prior to that, and they really have more offensive firepower and more shooting than they had in the past. So I keep an eye on those, the two teams in the Rocky Mountain region, so to speak. I'm not as high on Houston. I just think they're so reliant and dependent on James Harden. I have questions about how the fit will look in the playoffs with Russell Westbrook. So outside of L.A., I keep an eye on Denver and Utah. I think those two teams have a real shot. And as you guys know, I mean, whoever the matchup is in the first round of a Western Conference playoff series, it's going to be brutal. And there'll be some really good teams that are disappointed that go home after round one.
Ryan, did you your father and your brothers have like a pact that you were all going to be super successful in pro sports? Was that like something you guys discussed as a family? Because I don't know how many people know the story, but the fact that you're a front office exec guy, now you're working in the media, your other brother's working for Arizona, and your other brother works for ESPN, and your dad was a longtime columnist. It's pretty remarkable to get every single McDonough a great gig like that, isn't it? What did you guys do to execute this early on?
Yeah, well, it certainly started with our father, Will McDonough, who, you know, worked for the Boston Globe for 44 years and then was one of the first guys to cross over from print media to CBS and NBC and was on pregame, halftime, and postgame shows with Bob Costas and O.J. Simpson. So it started with him, guys. I mean, we all owe the credit to him. We just kind of followed in his footsteps. And look, our mother tried. She brought us to the art museum and had us take piano lessons and tried to have us be balanced, well-rounded individuals. But obviously she failed miserably because we're all sitting here watching and talking sports, which is what we love doing.
Yeah, it beats work, as we say, right? You know, it beats having a real job, that's for sure. Radio.com Sports NBA Insider, Ryan McDonough. Insider calls are brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. You can also hear Ryan on Scal and Pals, available on radio.com or wherever you find your podcast. Great basketball talk with everything you need to hear on the NBA from Brian and Scalabrine. Brian Scalabrine, Kendrick Perkins, and more. Just search Scal. Ryan, thank you so much for the time today, man. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll catch up again here soon.
Yeah, Brandon and Andy, appreciate you guys having me on. And if the Blazers make a move, I'd be happy to jump back on with you guys and break it all down.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be a move coming for Portland. Covington, is that a name that does it for you? 55305 is the fan text line. He's getting the sense from Neil O'Shea that they're going to hold on. They're not going to be sellers at the deadline.
Yeesh.
They're going to hold on to their pieces, maybe add, wait and see. How does that make you feel? Big weekend for them. Also, an update from an NBA writer on the landscape changing in the NBA. What's it going to look like? How sooner changes coming. We'll get to that crunch time coming up next on The Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, with their trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time. I was not at the Glorious House of Gains today.
That is buffoonery.
I need a day off. I'll be there tomorrow. Maybe on Sunday, depending on if I'm feeling sparky. Coming up in the final hour, we have a football player saying something that I'm wondering what the reaction is to. We have to spread the line. Some final thoughts on the NFC and AFC championship games. By the way, get your fake sponsors in 55305 fan text line. For Sprague in the line, we'll make our picks for the weekend. Just talked to Ryan McDonough, though, a longtime front office executive in the NBA for the Celtics, former GM of the Suns, and he just had a conversation recently with Neil O'Shea. We don't get a chance to talk to Neil O'Shea, so I was curious to pick his brain on what he thought he heard from him.
Yep.
And he's getting the sense this is hold. batten down the hatches. Let's ride it out. See how we look healthy when guys come back. No need to ship off one of those contracts. How does that make people feel?
Well, one, I think it should make people a little frustrated because I think Neil's telling you that because he can't find any trade partners. Look, Neil Olshey is a guy that wants to win and shove it in everybody's face as soon as he can. I can't fathom he thinks this team is talented enough to ride out a wave and just be okay. You have two assets you're going to lose next year, or this summer, I should say. And so most people assumed when you acquired them, they were going to help fill voids and then get to a point where, hey, we need to win a few more games to get the four seed. Make a trade and go get an asset or two in exchange for an expiring contract. And right now, all we continue to hear, I heard it from Windhorst, we've heard it now from Ryan McDonough, is that they're not looking to be sellers, or buyers, I should say, and trade their assets. So I don't know. If I was a Blazer fan, you're already disappointed. The season sucked. Injuries have derailed you as well. You might already be checked out, or you might actually still care about being an eighth seed. And if you do, and you think Nurkic can't come back and actually contribute, I don't. I think he's going to struggle. I think he's going to be super out of shape.
That's going to take time.
And you think Collins coming back too can add you over the top, then great. You should be rooting for a move. But if he's not going to make a move, this team is just going to be what they've been. They'll win a game that you don't think they will. They lose three games they shouldn't. They'll win another game, and then they'll lose two more, and then they'll win two, and then they'll lose two, and then they'll win four, and then they'll lose only one. Like, they're just going to be this up and down team, and it, you know, it continues tonight against Dallas on ESPN at 6:30. But I would be disappointed if I was a Blazer fan and I heard Neil Olshey wasn't going to do anything.
Yeah, you can't swing it for anything. We went over on the show yesterday. If you missed, I'm not going to read off the games again, but the next 13 are very challenging, basically leading into the All-Star break. The schedule is extremely tough, starting with Dallas tonight. No, KC was playing good. That's back-to-back on the road. You come back with some tougher games as well. The name that he mentioned there as a possible trade partner or piece that Portland should go after is Robert Covington, who plays for Minnesota. Those of you who don't know anything about him, he's 29. He's in his sixth season in the league. It was originally in Houston, then went to Philly. Traded last season to Minnesota, and he's averaging just shy of 13 points per game, 5.5 rebounds. What's he shooting? 36% from three, 40% from the floor. His contract status for the next 2 years, he is still under contract at about $12.5 million. So he's a free agent not until the 2022 season. So he's a wing guy. He can shoot a little bit, play some defense. But that, to me, seems like something you're going to have to give up more than just an expiring contract to go get.
Yeah, because Minnesota, they already put a report out there that multiple teams have called Minnesota about getting Covington, and they have not accepted any deals. And right now they might be asking, they might have driven their prices up a little bit to have Robert Covington. Look, this is the reality for Portland. Nurkic and Collins are your future, right? They're both banged up, but they're coming back. Mm-hmm. Neil Olshey is not pivoting from these four players. Well, you could really say five with Anthony Simons.
Sure.
He's not pivoting from them. So you have to be realistic here and say, are they going to find a wing? Everybody always points to that with this Portland team. They need a wing. They need a wing. And I get it. But what makes sense here? Do you go get a wing? Or, I mean, a high-priced wing? Or do you bring in a guy like I think Covington is as good as you're going to get. I think a $12 to $13 million a year player who gives you 35 to 38% from three, is known to be a good defender, and averages about 10 points a game. I think that's as good as you're going to get. And unless Neil Olshey surprises me, I just think he's going to trust that Dame, CJ, Nurk, and Zach, along with Anfernee, are going to be able to carry them, and then they'll fill in the missing piece. If they go to the summer not giving up their two assets but having cap space, they're going to go look for the next Robert Covington, and they're going to try to sign him to 12 to 13 to 14 a year, and call it good, because you're not going to go get some next level wing. That's not how this team is built. So I think Blazer fan, if you're disappointed in Covington, if you don't care about having a Covington, I think you need to accept Covington's as good as it gets. Rodney Hood, for what he was doing before his injury, was about what Robert Covington is doing. It's the same thing. So that's as good as it's going to get to me at the wing, unless you go heavy and you trade a Zach, or you trade a CJ, or you trade a Nurkic.
And, for a bigger piece.
Yeah, for a much bigger piece.
Well, the only way with their current assets that they could possibly acquire Covington, one, they'd have to include a draft pick somewhere along the line that's valuable, and two,
they can't do a first, right? Don't they have a thing where they can't give a first away?
You can't give them, you can't be void of first-round pick, your picks, in two consecutive years. You have to go every other year. I don't know how far in advance Like, I don't know, you can trade your first round pick 10 years from now, but they're going to have to acquire, if they want him, they're going to have to take, I don't know who's got a bad contract outside of Wiggins on that.
Well, hell, I'd take Wiggins if you could get him.
But I don't know if they've got a really bad contract sitting on the bench somewhere, but you would have to take one back if you're using those expiring contracts to make a deal.
Yeah, the unique thing from Minnesota, too, is it sounds like they're trying to get Russell from Golden State, and I imagine they're trying to clear that cap space to make him a part of their future plans.
And in that case, I don't fathom that they want to trade a Wiggins yet.
Right. So would you be able to do a Bazemore and a first-round pick for Covington? You know, and then are you...
There's worse deals.
We're giving... There's worse deals. I want to know, does Covington... what does Covington do for your team?
I think he's marginally better.
Yeah, I think he's a good player, but...
when healthy, that's the whole equation, too, that you got to answer.
Giving a first-round draft pick sometimes, though, too loosely, I don't like.
Yeah.
Yeah. If the Blazers truly want a potential game-changing wing...
we know where to find it.
It's in the draft.
Swag, we know where to find it. When you said taking on another bad contract in exchange for the expirings, were you talking about taking on another expiring contract? Because they did just make a deal for a guy that Portland gave a stupid contract to that is expiring at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And he might add something to you, and that's Mr. Allen Crabbe.
Yeah. Oh, God, please, no. I don't want to come full circle on that. I know.
It would only be
We already got those. Why are we going expiring for expiring?
Well, I'm just saying, if you had to throw in another deal in a Covington trade, I'd rather have Robert Covington and Allen Crabbe come back. That way I have two shooters and one guy who I know will play defense.
I don't think they'd be looking, and I haven't looked at the end of their bench, but if they've got somebody down there who's already at the end of his rope and he's still on the books for $15 or $16 million for two more years, that's what I'm thinking. If
your best bet is like a Gorgui Jang.
Something like that.
I mean, that's, which, by the way... not horrific.
No. Maybe go get Noah Vonleh back. What do you think? My buddy Spencer brought up a good point yesterday. Minnesota is just like Blazer X. They're like Blazer Light.
Yeah.
Because they got Shabazz. They got Jake Lehman. They got Noah Vonleh. Now they traded for Allen Crabbe. And isn't Vanderpool their head coach?
He's an assistant
head coach, whatever.
Yeah, if you wanted to know what the Blazers would be without Dame, you'd see the Timberwolves.
That's where they'd be. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, where trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time. Locally owned and operated with 6 locations to serve you. Coming up in the final hour of the show, I have a question about something going on this weekend that I want to ask, and I don't know where people are at on it, so I want to get to that. We'll have some final thoughts on the AFC and NFC title game. An NFL player said something that I'm curious how people receive it, and we have to Sprague the Line at 2:30, so get your fake sponsors in. 553-305 is the fan text line. Loaded final hour on a Friday. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.